What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm gonna be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Grave Talks, Learning the Ropes, a conversation with Mark Menard. Investigating the paranormal is a job that many do not take lightly. After all, going into someone's home that has already been stirred up by something and asking it to show itself may not bring peace. Not everyone is qualified to rid a home of spirits, just as not everyone is qualified to call them out. Piece by piece, everyone learns their skills and abilities. Today we talk with Mark Menard about his own journey down that path.
I started back when I was 16 years old, being a stupid kid investigating cemeteries, and I was with a bunch of friends doing it, and for some odd reason, I'm not going to say it was a spirit, but I felt a personal attachment to the cemetery. Also, I was touched on the elbow, not by any of my friends I was with, but I was touched by something, and that got me fascinated into it, and I took a little break from it. Eventually, I got back into doing it a few years later, and I've been hooked ever since. I did a ghost tour with my wife in New Orleans, and I thought it was funny because everyone was obviously drunk and joking around about spirits, and I knew better. Mm-hmm. But then I joined a team as a tech manager. I was doing that with them for a few. I did a few residential cases. Eventually, I wanted something more. I talked it over with my wife, and I decided, let's get the ball rolling. I'll start my own team. I was a co-founder with someone else he eventually just left. So it's my team now, but we started, we had some people drop out. I still have some of the original members, but we ended up getting the team trademarked, and we've been pretty busy with, we've done a few commercial cases.
Tell me about earlier on when you kind of had those experiences at the graveyard as a teenager. What was your outlook on the paranormal up until that point? I mean, a lot of us are just kind of curious. Some of us are, you know, we believe. What was your opinion as the young version of you prior to having that experience?
I know when I was a teenager, I know Ghost Hunters was a huge TV show back then. I think that's one reason that got me into it. I decided, hey, if they can do it, I can do it. So I went out to a cemetery and pretty much investigated. I believe I had a EMF device, a digital recorder, and a camera. That was it.
So the first time you had an experience of any sort with the paranormal, you'd say, was in that cemetery that day when you were a teenager, you know, kind of going around and seeing what's up.
Correct.
How did you react to that? I mean, when you got out of there and you had that experience, what was going through your mind? Were you fully accepting that this just happened, or were you trying to logically put together other ways that maybe you experienced what you experienced?
I think first off, I was scared a little bit, but also I wanted to know what else just happened. I started trying to find out logically what happened. I looked around to see if maybe it was one of my friends that touched me, or in fact, Matt, they weren't anywhere near me, and it made me want to find more answers. Mm-hmm. Of what's going on. Like, so, was I really just touched, or was it my imagination? And it just drove me to be more passionate about it and find out more answers.
So how did you go about that? How did you then begin to do that? What was the next step in your journey to get more answers?
Just started doing research online. Pretty much looking up stories of the cemetery.
So you were specifically looking into that cemetery itself?
Correct.
Okay, you really wanted to find out more about that specific place and that specific incident that would happen to you, not just paranormal as a whole. So what did you find as you started to dig into the history and story of that cemetery?
There was a lot of lore of people being touched by children in there. I know there was a story of a possible phantom truck. As far as back I can remember, I don't think there was any real evidence of a ghost truck.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume there was probably children that were passed away and possibly still haunt that location.
So when you had the experience at the cemetery and, you know, the touching on your shoulder, were you the only one within your group that had an experience that day?
Correct.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
So it wasn't anyone else going, I felt that too, or I sense this as well. It was only you that had that. That must have been kind of difficult though too. I mean, especially when you're a group of kids. How was that accepted amongst the group?
I think the kids I was with really wanted to go out ghost hunting. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of us really thought, hey, we're going to find a ghost out here.
Yeah. Why do you think it was you that had the experience?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out till this day.
Yeah.
Obviously, myself being 33 years old now, obviously I had my share of more experiences that obviously made me really want to find out more answers.
Sure. Did you find any answers in your research onto the cemetery? I know there's stories of the truck and children and this or that. Did anything really suffice to you to say, well, this is what it was?
No. still pondering that.
Sure. To this day. As it always is. Everyone starts out looking for answers and ends up with far more questions than answers. Yep. So tell me more about, as you got further into, life and in investigating and all of that, what was some of the other experiences you had early on?
Like I said, I took a little break from it. And then eventually I got back into it. I was with a team doing as a tech manager, setting up the equipment and all that stuff. And, we were doing a residential case, and it was a real good personal experience. We had myself and another investigator were sitting in the bedroom, asking questions, trying to get an answer.
Before we get to what happened with you, give me some background on this case. What was the story? What were the people experiencing? Why were you there?
It was a three-floor house. They started doing some work to the house, and they started getting some paranormal activity. I guess all three floors had it. I know the women, the brother, the sister, and the father lost his wife, actually died in the house. On his floor, he was having experiences of possibly his wife. I don't really remember what the sister was experiencing, but the most heaviness was up in the third floor where the brother lived. He had some attachment. As far as I know, the medium that was with us said that there was a portal in the closet area, but it started making people really sick up there, feeling nauseous, uneasy.
Now, I got a question about some of these things already. The wife that died, was this natural causes? What sort of circumstances are we talking about?
It was natural. Okay. She passed away with family around her on, I believe, the couch that was still
there
in the living room.
Okay. So they're experiencing these things, and they're naturally kind of attributing it, I'm sure, to her, because that's what most do when they start experiencing paranormal things shortly after a loved one passes. And you had some experiences there as well. Tell me what you guys experienced in your investigation.
I know myself, I felt very uneasy being upstairs. I know the brother had a bunch of, I would say, knives and hatchet in the coffee table. It wasn't really, I wasn't afraid of that stuff, but I've heard stories from my lead investigators about how people have gotten sick up there and felt uneasy. I know myself, I felt uneasy, nauseous. I know at one point, me and another investigator thought we heard a big bang in the other room, and we thought it was the brother's dog, and come to find out the dog was outside. So we try to find out logically, okay, well, what could have caused it? Was it a door slamming or anything like that? And I know we cannot figure out or replay what we just heard.
Now, what's the attitude of the people in the house at this time? Are they, is it a positive atmosphere with the living? Is it stressful? I mean, what were you finding out about their, the demeanor of kind of how things were going on with the people who resided there every day?
I know I didn't really speak with the father too much. The sister is the one who called us in. She was very really wanted to know what was going on in the house. The brother, I feel like had, I know he had a lot of motorcycle injuries that might have triggered something where some of the spirits were following him home. Also, I think there was a lot of psychological issues going on.
Sure.
I know he was taking pictures. So paint the picture. I was in his bedroom with another investigator sitting on the floor doing some digital recorder work. And he was taking pictures of us with his phone. And every couple minutes, he would say, oh, you see the face. You see the faces. There's faces on your body or on your clothes. So I think a lot of times the human mind wants you to believe that there are faces on you.
Sure.
Which I know, looking at the picture, I did not see any faces.
Yeah. But it could be something where there could be something there that is tormenting someone with a mental disorder. Yeah. So you were there in the house, and you said you talked more with the sister of the woman who had passed. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me more about your experiences with her and what you found throughout the rest of the investigation.
As far as the sister, she was very nice. She really wanted to know if they really were having paranormal activity, or is it all imagination? Is it in their head?
Yeah.
She firmly believed that there was paranormal activity throughout the whole house, even the basement. She said that there was a well down there that some kids passed away in. The father, I didn't really speak to, like I said,
by choice, or he didn't want to speak to you?
I didn't really talk to him that much. He was pretty much just watching TV all night. But as far as his apartment goes, I don't think we caught anything. I think we got a little bit of EMF going, but other than that, it wasn't crazy. The most activity was up on the third floor, which where the brother was living. I know we tried, I don't really remember what my lead investigators did, but we tried cleansing the house a little bit, try and help him get all that negative energy out of him. As far as I know, I think a few weeks after that, they ended up undoing everything that we did to help them.
So what was your goal at the time when they called you? Was it there to investigate and to give confirmation that, yeah, we think there's something here too? Was it to eradicate what was going on in the house?
We were called in to, we obviously did our research on the house, and we went there to investigate and also get them answers. But we ended up asking the clients, okay, what would you like us to do? Would you like us to just get you answers? Do you want a cleansing? They wanted their whole house to be saged, and also the brother wanted all the negative energy out of him. We just tried to cleanse the house as best we could. And
I mean, did you feel qualified to do that at that moment?
Myself, no. But my lead investigators at the time, and also all the members of the team, who I wouldn't say experts, because no one's really an expert, but they were well qualified to sage the house and bless the house. And
so you're kind of learning about it at this point in time, and like how things are working and.
Yep. Okay. No, like before, when I was a teenager, yeah, just being the stupid teenager going out, like this was like the first time I actually was part of a real paranormal team. So obviously I knew a lot about technology, from hooking up cameras to all that stuff, but this was my actual real first time going out investigating the paranormal with a real team.
So how did you feel when they, other members of the team said, yeah, okay, we can take that up, we can help cleanse the house? What are you expecting? What exactly happened when that began, and how did that feel for you?
I think it's pretty much what you believe in. If you really believe that cleansing a house, doing prayers is going to help, I believe that it's pretty much what you believe in. I know myself, being Catholic, I believe that blessing a house and saging will actually work if you believe it to work.
Mm-hmm.
I know myself, I carry multiple forms of protection.
Yeah.
I know it's might be just a bracelet, but or a coin or something, but to me, if it will protect me, then it will. But that's in my own faith, and it might not work for you, but it works for me.
So if one person is blessing a house, like they did, and they believe that when they're doing it, the person who's performing the blessing, do the people who live there also have to believe in the power of it for it to be effective?
Absolutely. They want to believe, they have to believe that it's going to work, because if you don't believe it's not going to work, then all that negative and stress and anxiety are just going to stay there. But if you really believe that cleansing a house or doing a blessing is going to help your family, your household, then it's going to work.
You'd said that shortly after you guys had been there and the cleansing was done, that they undid everything. How did that occur?
I'm not really too sure what happened afterwards. I think the brawler started. I know the brother undid everything. I'm not too sure about the sister or father, but as far as I know, all the paranormal activity that they were having started back up again.
Sure, and we've established that part, but I'm just asking, how did it start back up again?
Like I said, I'm not too sure what happened. I know the lead investigators at the time told us that
it's back.
It just went right back to normal.
Yeah. When you have something like that, and a client has experiences, you go in, you do your thing, and let's say they don't follow the directions on, you know, hey, don't be doing this if you want this to stay away. They still just kind of go back to whatever they were doing. What do you do as an investigator if they say it's back again? Can you come back and help, or do you draw a line and say, look, we've done all that we can, but you have to do your part too?
I know for my team now, I know if someone said, hey, I know you guys were just here last month, but the activity is still going on, or like, we need your help again. I know my team and myself will drop everything and try and get back out there and help again. If they need more answers or another blessing or sage the house. Trying to think if there was a time that we actually did that.
As you've kind of moved into having your own team and such, and having more control and not just learning from others, tell me about how that kind of progressed, and tell me about some of the cases that you've been involved with. Just, we'll start out with one and kind of move on from there. What's one that stands out to you more than others?
It was probably our case in Brockton that really, we actually, that was actually the one that I was trying to remember, that we actually went back twice to get more answers.
So tell me about the case itself. Tell me about the call, email, whatever you got, and what were the people experiencing?
They actually filled out a form on our website. We got in contact with them. We learned pretty much everything that was going on. We did some research on the...
Okay. Tell me about what was going on.
From our research, we found out that there was the clients were saying that they actually found bones across the street in a park. Come to find out, it was an actual cemetery that they dug up and tried moving the graves. And that was part of, the clients thought that some of the unrested spirits that were in the cemetery that they dug up was contributing to their house.
Why were they digging up the cemetery across the street?
I believe they were trying to put in a brand new park over there.
Okay.
So they're moving
the graves around then?
It was, I believe it was, if I remember correctly, it was a unmarked graves, I believe.
Okay.
I don't think they believed that. I don't think they knew that they were there till they started digging it up.
Oh, and then they found out that they were digging into. But so, how did they handle that? They still just kind of, well, we found bodies, let's move them somewhere else.
Correct.
Okay. So then, what were the people's? What were the? They knew this happened as a fact across the street. What specifically was going on in the house?
They said they had shadows, voices. I know there was a couple floors. I know the sister lived upstairs. She was hearing children and voices. The main floor, they had some voices, some cold spots. In the basement, they had shadow people. They felt very uneasy down the basement. They had a storage room with, they had a bunch of their stuff that they were storing in that room. We got there, we talked with the clients, they showed us around the house. Then we set up our equipment. And from there, we started investigating, and they actually investigated with us. We got some answers, but we didn't. We got a lot of voices going on. I know my tech manager, my other investigator, got a good EVP where it's was very clear that they actually heard with their own ears, also on the recorder. It wasn't until the second time that we went there that we actually got a lot of good evidence, a lot of answers. The client's brother passed away, and we were doing a spirit box session downstairs, which the spirits can use that spirit box to talk
sure.
within the frequencies. And the client was asking, his name was Peter, and was said, Peter, what did you used to do when you drove past the house? And the spirit box said, beep, beep. And she said, getting very emotional. And we asked her what was going on. And she said that my brother Peter would drive past the house and beep twice. And the day that he passed away, he didn't beep. And I'm not saying it is Peter or it's not Peter, but it really made you emotional too. And that the client never got that closure.
Sure. But then almost kind of helped to get that by that session.
Yes.
So when you had stopped, you said you went there multiple times. After the first time you were there and you had, you know, the experiences that you did, what was, number one, what was the goal of being there the first night? And then what brought you back?
The first time was they were very scared what was going on. They wanted some answers. After investigating, we ended up blessing the house and staging. We got a call, well, Facebook Messenger. She messaged us asking if we could come back out because they were having still more activity. And so we went out there the second time, and that's when we started getting the answers of her brother passing away, and got a little more information to piece it together, and we presented the evidence to the clients. And instead of them being scared and worried, they were okay with the information we gave out. They knew that there was family in the house that passed away, but they haven't moved on, but they were there to communicate with the clients.
Was it just the two times that you went there?
Correct.
Okay. So once they had this confirmation that it's the brother that's there, and it's not something dark, not something they need to be scared of, was there no more cleansing? Was it just, okay, we're good, just now that we have the answer?
Yes. We decided not to cleanse it again because the clients didn't want us to.
Does a cleansing work on something like that? I mean, that's my question. If it's not something demonic or something bad, what is a cleansing doing? I mean, if it's her brother.
I think the first time we did it, we didn't know it was the brother. But it goes back to believing that it's going to work.
But do cleansing have, does cleansing a house have a power on the spirit of a person? I mean, and it, you know, because you can have all the will in the world to be like, I want, you know, anything bad to go away. But if it's not bad, what's not to say that spirit's like, you're not talking to me. And they,
yeah.
I mean, does saging, does that sort of thing work when we're talking about someone who is just a normal soul, not a violent, not a someone who's out to cause problems, but just there?
I know personally, I believe that saging and cleansing a house will take away the evil if there's an evil spirit or demonic. I don't think that it's gonna get rid of, let's say, good ghosts that don't want to move on. I think sometimes maybe cleansing or saging a house might give that spirit closure to move on to the next chapter in their life.
Like kind of a signal like, hey, we know you're not evil, but we're doing this because this is troubling us. So it's more like passively aggressively telling the ghost to leave without just being like, hey, can you please get out of my house?
No, yeah. I think it's cleansing, by my point of view, is a nice way of saying, get out of my house.
Yeah. And then you hope they get the signal.
If not, you get a roommate.
Yep. That wraps up our entire conversation with Mark Menard. Thank you to him for talking with us today and sharing his experiences. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, Lady Luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.